Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, July 28th, 2013. This is episode 1000. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com. Click the radio microphone and enter Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about computers and the internet and technology and smartphones and tablets, home theater and digital photography, all that jazz. At 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That phone number's starting to sound a little worn out because we've been using it for 1,000 episodes now. That's what the 1,000 is, by the way. It's the 1,000th time we've used that phone number. Because I've been doing this show since 1991, so that's many more.
You don't look a day over 999.
Thank you, Heather Hammond, that's who's so been a recent but more than welcome addition to the show.
Yay.
For the first 900 episodes, I had to do it all by myself. And now I have a little help.
And then I got a little tired of running aboard.
I'm tired. I'm so tired. So the show began, we started counting in 2004 when I started doing the Tech Guy show. On KFI in Los Angeles, and in some ways, that's also the reason we started counting. That was also the first show we offered for download, and we've offered every show since then for download. So, when you offer shows for download, you start counting, right? So, episode one was January 4th, 2004. Episode two, episode three, and 104 shows a year, year in, year out, and you get up to 1,000 after a while, pretty quick. So all 1,000 of them are on the internet, amazingly enough. But again, this is I've been doing it since longer than that. What happened is I quit radio in 1998. You could quit radio, but it never quits you, does it? You know this. You know this, Heather.
It keeps calling you back.
They keep pulling me in. And I went to do tech TV, and I thought, well, I'm working 5 days a week. I shouldn't have to work 7 days a week. So I backed down. But I started doing this in 91, did it 91 through 97 on a variety of stations in San Francisco, starting on KNBR in San Francisco, and then to KSFO, which is a great San Francisco station, and then finally at KGO, which was the number one station in San Francisco for many, many years. Still is, I think. And then took 6 years off to do television with a mistake, because I have a face for radio, so that wasn't a good move. After 6 years, TV rejected me, and so I went back into radio, and I've been doing it ever since. So that's how you get to 1,000 episodes, boys and girls. Oh, man. Anyway, and I want to thank all the people who've been with me all this time, and those are the people in the chat room. A great bunch, including Dan Hendricks, our chat moderator, who's been with me since day one, and all of the folks, and I know there's lots of them in the chat room, who have been here since the beginning of time. So, thank you. And enough of that 1,000th episode. So, I've been playing with two things from Google. I got them both yesterday. Google, you know, had an announcement on Wednesday. They called it Breakfast with Sundar Pichai. Really kind of downplaying the importance of what this was. Because, you know, breakfast, it sounds like you're going to have a cruller, a cup of coffee. Maybe he'll talk a little bit about Chrome or Android. Those are his areas of expertise at the Google. Instead,
What did they serve?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Oh.
I was watching. They streamed it, thank goodness. I didn't get it. For some reason, I did not get an invite to that, even though it's just down the road. No, that's okay. I don't, you know, it's not, I wouldn't have gone because what we've done these days, which is great, as long as the company does this, and Google's been doing it from the beginning, Facebook does it, Apple does it off and on, as long as they stream the meeting, then anybody can watch it on the internet, right? And so what we do is, I have a, you know, as you know, Heather, but we have a podcast network where we podcast is the wrong word for it, but we have an internet television channel. How about that? Where we do a lot of this stuff. And whenever there's a live announcement like that, I and my news team, Tom Merritt and Sarah Lane and I as Actar, will sit down and we'll watch the feed. We'll play it for people and we'll comment on it. So it's kind of annoying, kind of snarky.
Kind of Mystery Science.
It's Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's exactly, if you know that show, that old TV show where they'd play bad old movies and sit in front of the screen and make fun of it. That's what this is.
And you throw things at the screen.
Yeah. Sometimes we do. I'll tell you when we did, when Samsung did its horrendous Galaxy S4 announcement. That's when we threw things at the screen. This time, the beginning of the show was not anything unexpected because there had been big leaks about the Google Nexus 7. Now, I bought the Nexus 7 when it first came out a year ago because it was some remarkable thing, a $200 7-inch tablet. And I kind of fell in love with the little guy. It had flaws. One of the big flaws was it slowed down over time. We found out why later, but it slowed down over time. So it was due for what they call in the industry a refresh. Well, this was more than a refresh. This was a remarkable upgrade that, had it been Apple, would have been front page news everywhere. But because it's Google, it was like, oh, a new tablet. The Nexus 7 is a remarkable tablet. They cost a little more, $229, but that's for 16 gigs, so you get more RAM than you did in the original version. You also get a 5-megapixel camera, just like the iPad Mini. It's roughly the same size as an iPad Mini. It's a little, the biggest difference, and the only reason you might still want to buy an iPad Mini is the screen ratio on the iPad Mini is 4:3, more like an old style TV set. And the Nexus 7 is 16:9. It's widescreen. You know, I'm not sure I'm crazy about it. It looks a little strange in my hand. It doesn't feel a little tall, like a little skyscrapery. But on the other hand, if you're watching movies, it's a widescreen, so it works better. And most of the new phones are 16:9. Your new TV, you know, your HDMI HD TV is 16:9. So I guess we're getting used to that, you know, 16 across and 9 up and down ratio. But in every other respect, this kicks the pants off the iPad Mini. It's faster. Much better screen. It's Retina. It's the highest resolution 7-inch tablet out. 323 dots per inch is incredible. Incredible. I mean, the crisp, the quality, the color, the speed, too. It's a very, very fast machine. They have a very fast processor. They say 1.8 times faster than the old Nexus 7 and 4 times faster graphics performance. And you need that, of course, because you have more than 4 times the dots on the screen, so you got to work really hard at that. But boy, it works well. It really is a fabulous device. I'm extremely happy with it. I played with it all last night. My girlfriend wasn't too happy about that. But put down the Nexus. No, it's really cool. This is so old. Look, oh wow, set it all up. So for $229, I mean, I'm going to have to adjust. I really like the iPad Mini, and it was my my tablet of choice for the last year. I'm going to have to say, at this point, no question in my mind. Unless you're so tied to the Apple ecosystem, you have to have those Apple apps or for some other reason. And there are apps you can get on the iPad you can't get on the Android. Vice versa, I might add. The dictation, the voice activation on Android is far better than Siri on the iPad. But all other things being equal, for $110 less, you get a lot more, and a beautiful screen. And so I have to amend my recommendation and say the Nexus 7 is the tablet of choice. Fabulous. Just fabulous. For that price? I don't know how they're doing it. Then that wasn't enough. Then they said, oh, one more thing. The old Apple, one more thing. And they showed us something that I think is going to change the world. The Google Chromecast, they call it. It's a little like a USB key you plug into your TV or your HDMI port. I plugged it into my AV receiver. And now you can play anything from your tablet or your laptop, anything you've got in a Chrome tab. But more importantly, you can also run Netflix at 1080p, super high resolution. Not playing it through your Wi-Fi to the TV, but actually it has its own Wi-Fi connection, the Chromecast, and it picks it up. So you could turn off the tablet or do something else with it, and it keeps on playing. Plays music from Google Music. It was great. I was playing my music through, you know, I was controlling it from the Nexus 7, but you could do it from an iPhone, not yet an iPhone, but soon an iPhone, an iPad, any Android device, and any computer, because it'll have a Chromecast button on it. And this thing is $35. They're already sold out. It's remarkable. Remarkable. Anyway, big announcements this week. We could talk about that and anything on your mind. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I thought that was the chicken dance for a minute. I started flapping my wings. It's not the chicken dance. What are you laughing at?
Just because it's funny.
Heather Hummond.
And then this would be Arrested Development, right?
It's arrested something.
Yeah.
Ought to be arrested. All right, Heather, I see a board full of calls. Where should I start on this?
I'm thinking Ray in L.A. What do you think?
Okay, Ray in L.A. That sounds good to me. Line 5. Hi, Ray. Leo. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Ray. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you on your 1,000th episode.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you for everything that you've done for all of us out here in this tech world.
Yeah, well, you don't need to thank me. I have the best job in the world. I really do. I thank you and the Lord every day that I have this job. It is the best job ever. So thank you. You're welcome, I guess. Thank you for letting me do it.
Oh, thank you. Well, my question, Leo, is that I recently purchased a Sony Xperia Z.
Yes.
Smartphone.
Very nice phones, I think.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yes, you have good taste, sir. Unless you're Mr. Sony, in which case, thank you.
Oh, no, I wish. But I'm currently running for antivirus. I'm running the free AVG I've downloaded. And I just want to ask you, was there a good antivirus for the cell phones?
Yeah, I don't use... Oh, you mean you're using free AVG on your Windows or are you using it on the phone?
Well, on the Windows.
Windows, yeah. Well, I see what you're saying. You are using it on the phone. Yeah, I haven't tried AVG on Android. I use Lookout, which I like a lot, is also free. Lookout has a couple of extra features that I don't know if the AVG has these, where it will, if you lose your phone, you can wipe it, you can find it.
AVG has that.
It
also
has that too. This is probably a very competitive marketplace now. Highly recommend. I recommend Lookout because that's what I use, but I haven't tried AVG. I'm sure it's fine. Other companies, there are a couple other companies that make free Android AV. The question is really, do you need it? And it's hard to say. There are malware programs on Android, and I've always thought that smartphones would be just a great target for bad guys. But it turns out, I think, because smartphones were designed a little later, they were already in the era of hackers on the internet. So you have to remember that our operating systems, our desktop operating systems, like OS X and Windows, predate really bad stuff on the internet. And so they have had to be amended after the fact. But the operating systems on smartphones, for a variety of reasons, are less susceptible to attack, especially on the iPhone, where applications can't affect other applications, things like that. Nevertheless, both the iPhone and Android and BlackBerry have had attacks in the past. There is a nasty bug on Android, which was discovered earlier this year, February. Google, by March, had patched the Play Store. So if you the Play Store does scanning before you can download it for this particular bug. And then they amended the operating system on the phone itself. And you can tell if you've got this if you go to your security settings. There'll be a check mark that says scan applications. And you should absolutely check that box. Because that's looking for a particular flaw, although I imagine they'll add others. So I guess the point is that Android now has its own security. Not sure whether it's better or different even than what Lookout and AVG are doing. So this checkbox says verify apps, block or warn before installing apps that may cause harm. That's built into Android now, and I think a good choice. There's a box above it that says unknown sources. I'd uncheck that. That way, you're only downloading from the Google Play Store. If you do those two things, it seems unlikely that you will get affected by malware. If you check the unknown sources box, that means you can download it. It even warns you. You can download applications from places other than Google, and that's a potential problem. But if you're getting your Android apps from Amazon or Google or, you know, one of these well-established stores, I think you're probably all right. Doesn't stop me from using Lookout. Lookout's free. It doesn't really seem to add any problems. And it does the same thing. When you download a new application, Lookout will check it and say, oh, that's fine. Go ahead and use it. So I would say go ahead and use those. I don't know AVG, but I'm sure it's fine. If somebody in the chat room has an opinion, I'd love to hear it. I don't recommend AVG on Windows. Haven't been that happy with that on Windows. But it's probably fine on Android. Mostly because they don't do a whole lot. They scan the app, basically. They don't do the same things that antiviruses do on desktops. But I would totally recommend it. And I do, in fact, put Lookout on every Android device. Why not? You know, if it doesn't slow things down and it doesn't use up battery, and as far as I can tell, it doesn't either, it's just belt and suspenders. What these are really doing is they're scanning for known attacks, and that's probably sufficient. John in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. Welcome.
I'm looking to buy a tablet.
Hmm.
And I have a Mac desktop, so I'm automatically kind of inclined towards the iPad, but there's a price issue.
Have you never owned a tablet? Have you owned any iOS devices?
No, just this. Okay. All I have is my desktop.
So there is an argument for going Apple if you already own an iPhone, for instance, because the iPad is basically a bigger iPhone. If you have never bought a tablet, boy, I would absolutely look at this Nexus 7, $229. They have or will have in a month for $369 an LTE 32 gigabyte version. If you need to be able to use it on the road, that would be a good choice. Still, and it's still less than Apple's comparable hardware by a lot.
Yeah, hugely. But the problem I have is I'm not the computer genius of the week, and is it downloading it is interacting between a desktop and a non-Mac tablet. Is that going to be an issue?
Well, even Apple no longer really requires you to connect to your iPad. They used to, and that was deemed a problem. Do you have a lot of iTunes music, movies, TV shows?
I've got just the music and then a lot of photography.
Photography doesn't matter. In fact, I think, arguably, Android is better because of Google Plus. Google Plus, when you take a picture on the Android device, actually, this is true on iPhone, too, it will upload it to Google Plus, categorize it, store it for you, so it's always backed up. If you're doing photography, I think iPhoto is probably the best app, and that's only on the iPad. There is a Google app called SnapStream that's pretty darn good on Android. But for photography, I mean, I have to say this screen is a better screen. Its gamut is better. Its color gamut is better than the iPad on the Nexus 7. So if for a photographer, that means you're getting all the colors, much more accurate reproduction. Of course, much higher resolution, which makes a big difference as well. As far as music goes, if the music is not protected, you could play it on anything. And there's one feature that Android has, iPad apparently will have soon, which is called Google Music. What I do is I run the Google Music app on my Mac. It uploads all my music to Google Music, and now I can stream all of my music to any Android device. They don't yet have a Mac app. There's a third-party app, but apparently they're coming up with it. I'm having a hard time, I'll be honest, recommending iPad anymore. There are those who should have it, but for the rest, I love this Nexus 7. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders. So just to reassure you, John, there's very little stuff. It's actually hard to transfer data from the Mac to an iPad. There's very little stuff you can't use. What I would suggest doing is setting up Dropbox on your Mac.
Okay, I've got that.
And then put Dropbox on your device, iPad or Android. And then all those files are available on both devices.
Okay. And I don't have a smartphone yet, so that's all part of the mix.
There's a new smartphone going to be announced August 1st. That, in my opinion, will be the best smartphone on the market.
And that would be?
it's going to be called the Moto X. It's from Motorola. It is the first phone Motorola's released since they became a Google company. And for that reason, I believe it'll be a pure Google experience, much like this Nexus 7 is. And I have to say, I'm increasingly of the opinion the number one selling Android phones right now are Samsung. My day-to-day phone is a Samsung Galaxy S4. But I'm increasingly of the opinion that the manufacturers, even HTC and certainly Samsung, are junking up what is a very good operating system, Android. They had to in the early days. Android really wasn't ready for prime time. And I have the first Android phone, the G1. From HTC, and it was horrid. It was horrid. But Android's gotten better at a very rapid clip because they iterate much more quickly than Apple does. And so the current version of Android 4.3 is fabulous.
And that's one of the bigger phones, right? It's bigger than the Apple phone.
So I'm in a little bit of a quandary here. I have some information about the Moto X that I cannot share because I'm under an NDA with Google. But so I can't tell you the size of it. The rumored size, and I can't even confirm whether this is accurate, is 4.7. It will certainly be bigger than the iPhone and probably a better screen than the iPhone. Although the iPhone has an excellent screen, but it's small.
Right.
Now, some people like a small screen. You know, I'm not going to say that's a personal choice. And if you like the iPhone is a 4-inch screen. I like a bigger screen. In fact, I love the Galaxy Note 2. But I'm increasingly of the opinion that what Samsung has done, the Galaxy S4 is just larded with junk. All sorts of silly stuff, like it watches your eyes, and if you look away from the phone, it pauses YouTube. That's just dumb. Not useful. Some people like it. I don't understand why. Now, you could turn that off. Nevertheless, it's all there. In fact, there's so much stuff that there's 4 pages of settings.
I don't need that kind of shenanigans.
No, I think the Moto X, I mean, we don't know, but August 1st, all will be revealed. I'm probably going to switch over to it, in my opinion, just from what I've heard.
All right.
It's going to be the best phone on the market. Now, we still are waiting to hear from the new iPhone. There will be a new iPhone in September.
Okay, and what about a new iPad?
Yes, almost certainly in October.
In October.
Well, no one knows. Apple doesn't say, but this last year they did it September, October. And usually they're available within a few weeks of the announcement.
Okay.
I love the iPad. When the iPad came out in 2010, I said this is the computer Apple was born to make. It's clear it has revolutionized computing. And Google is a follow-on. Google is saying, "Oh, wow, yeah," and quickly jump into the fray. But I have to say, because Apple moves slowly, Google's had the chance to catch up. And there's no question in my mind that the Nexus 7 has caught up, certainly if you're looking at an iPad mini.
Right. Well, I was thinking of the mini, but I want to have something that's all, you know, sort of compatible, all three pieces.
It is all compatible now. I don't think that there's an issue where you go, I mean, look, I use Mac desktops exclusively. I don't find that I am somehow disadvantaged on Android.
Okay.
I have iPhones and iPads.
My photography and my music.
No. In fact, I continue to use the Lightroom on the Mac for photography. I love it. But I don't, I'm taking more and more pictures with the camera phones and this you know, so I don't find myself disadvantaged. Music is different. What kind of, do you make music?
No, I just take it off iTunes and have a little library.
I've stopped buying stuff from iTunes. I buy it exclusively from Amazon and Google now.
Okay.
And both will play just fine on any Android device, as well as any iPad, although the iPad currently lacks a Google Music application. Google has said any day now. I'm being fair. I want to give you all the information. If you ask me my choice, it's clearly for the price. A Nexus 7 is head and shoulders above anything Apple's offering.
And is that going to be comparable in size to the Mini or the full-size iPad?
It's comparable to the Mini. There is a Nexus 10. It hasn't been refreshed yet. That's the 10-inch, and it has not been refreshed. I would wait for the refresh because it's due.
Okay.
If you want a big one. But, you know,
I don't know that I want the big
one. I think you want the 7-inch. Either the iPad, which is 7.9 inches, or the Nexus, which is 7 inches. I don't see, especially in the resolution of the Nexus 7, there's no reason for a bigger tablet. And this is pocketable. You have to have Captain Kangaroo pockets, but
yeah.
No, you could actually, I wouldn't recommend it, but you could carry it in your pocket. It's small enough, you certainly could throw it in a briefcase.
Cool.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I'm glad we could talk a little bit about this. And I often get fools, I don't tolerate fools lightly, who will send me emails or visit the chat room and say, oh, yeah, you hate Apple because they don't like you or whatever. They don't invite you to events. Google doesn't invite me to events either, by the way. That I am not. You must think me quite petty. I am not that petty. I have one job and one job only. And it is not to be loyal to a company. I'm not here to represent a company. I think a lot of times you think of tech journalism or car journalism or stereo journalism. These people seem to be highly influenced by their by fandom. And certainly users become fans. This isn't a team sport. The team I'm on is your team, the users' team. And so what I really, rah-rah, so what I really try to do is tell you what the best product is. Not, you know, you want to know what the best company is? You could argue Apple, but that's not what you're asking me. You're asking me what phone, what tablet, what computer. And you can pick and choose, and this is the beauty of it. You can have a Macintosh desktop. I do believe Mac and Apple makes the best laptops and desktops on the market today. And still have an Android phone and Android tablet. It's completely comfortable. I don't have any problem doing that. Pick the best product for what you need. And for some of you, an iPhone or an iPad is the best product. The reason I asked him if he made music, if you are a musician, the iPad is far better. The range and quality of synthesizer and music creation apps on the iPad is remarkable. Musicians have totally supported the iPad. So in that case, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. On the other hand, from what most people do, especially if you use Google Mail, a lot of us do, Android is the best. So my only job is to tell you what the best product is. And I try very hard, work very hard not to be partisan. In fact, I make a point of not meeting PR people, not going down. You know, we get a lot of invitations to parties and events and hang out with us. And I really attempt not to do that because I don't want to like these people because that would influence me. Oh, I can't hurt his feelings and say what a junky product he's made. So I stay well away. We are an hour north of Silicon Valley, and I don't go down and party with those guys. I don't get to know those guys. I'm trying not to have a inside the beltway mentality. My job is to represent you as an end user. I am an end user. I'm an enthusiast, and I want to stay that way, and agnostic as to company and platform. I want to choose the best tool, and that's why I love it when you call me and ask me, and I'll ask you some questions because it's different for everybody. 888-ASK-LEO, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Somebody in the chat room just asked me, Leo, why would you recommend a device? He's talking about what he thinks the Moto X is going to have. Why would you recommend a device with outdated specs? Because, friends, only kind of nutty geeks care about specs. What you care about really is how it performs, how it feels, how it works. Does it do what it needs to do? Is it fast? Is it fluid? Is it easy? Does it get out of the way? Those are the things you care about. Not, it's using a Snapdragon 600. I think there really are better chips out there. That's stupid. That's stupid talk. It's really how it feels in the hand. And I have to say, I also see a lot of people force-fitting solutions. There are a lot of people who have iPads with keyboards, for instance, because they want it to be a laptop. And I as much as I love tablets, they're not laptops. And, you know, they do make laptops. You can buy laptops. And so in many cases, now, there are people who do it and quite reasonably and are happy with it. Same thing with the Chromebook. I see people who really struggle because they're trying to get it to do something a more powerful computer could. Choose the right tool for the job. Just because you can use a hammer as a screwdriver doesn't mean you should. And so in my opinion, the way I will judge any hardware or any product is, does it get out of the way? Does it let me do what I want to do without bogging me down? Serge in Corona, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Serge.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Pretty good. So I have an S3, and so far I've loved it. But the problem is sometimes it gets really, really hot, and I get about an hour and a half of battery life.
Oh, yeah, that's a bad sign. So he's talking about the Galaxy S3 phone, which is an excellent phone. Probably, right up there with the iPhone as the best-selling phone of the last few years. But when a phone gets hot like that and the battery life goes down, that means some process, some program in the background is running when it shouldn't be.
Yeah, and I've looked into that via the process manager, but it doesn't show anything actually running and seeing much juice.
Yeah, process manager may not be the right solution for this. I would look at the end of that 1.5 hours, look at the battery store, you know, the battery manager, and see what's been using it. If the Android battery manager doesn't tell you enough detail, there's a free one called GSAM, G-S-A-M battery monitor, that'll tell you what's been using all that juice, and that's likely the product, the program that's going on and on and on. Now, if it's Android kernel or Android OS, it's a little harder because that's not really telling you much. That's just the operating system. But it means there's a runaway process, you know, and that's not normal. So you have to figure out what the app is. The couple of apps that are really notorious, Facebook is a terrible one.
Got it.
Yeah, good. what I do with Facebook is I turn off automatic updates, and it still updates, but it updates less. It's kind of annoying. It shouldn't update at all. I just had this happen with my Galaxy S4, interestingly enough. It got really hot. Battery died in a couple of hours. I thought, what is going on? I uninstalled a program that I had just installed, and it seems to be okay now. So I don't know what it is in your case, but that's what you're going to have to do. You know what's going on. There is some process or program that has run away, that is not stopping. And, of course, all smartphones have to do this. This is a constrained environment. You don't have a lot of battery. You don't have a lot of processor. You don't have a lot of memory. So smartphone operating systems, OS X, Android, BlackBerry, Windows Phone, all do roughly the same thing. That is, that when a process is on the screen, full screen, it gets control of the system. But processes that are in the background get less resource and eventually get shut down entirely, whether you ask them to or not. In fact, modern operating systems, phone operating systems, usually don't have a quit or a close button, right? That's because they handle it. And we're going to see that on the desktop, too. Both Windows and OS X are moving in that direction. They handle it. They say, no. When you're not looking at it, we'll shut it down. Because there's no reason I should be occupying any memory or using processor, because both of those use battery. And battery is a scarce resource on these devices. But occasionally something goes wrong. The big problem on Android phones is something called wake locks. That is when a program, even though your screen is off, wakes it up to get mail or to download updates. And they're working hard to fix this. Windows Phone has fixed this. iOS 7 will fix this. I believe Android and 4.3 is starting to fix this. The idea is to coalesce these wake locks to say, look, you can't get your data until I've got five other programs that want to do it. Then we're going to wake up. You're all going to do it at once. Then we're going to go back to sleep. Because otherwise what happens is wake up, and the phone is on all the time. And the battery just dies. And that's kind of what's been happening with you. So it's either one or more programs that is keeping the phone alive, awake, when it should be sleeping. And, of course, as when the phone's awake, it drains battery very fast. Even if the screen's off. Screen is usually the number one battery drain. It may take a little tweaking. This is one of the things Apple does better. Because Apple has tight control of the environment. And iOS 7 is going to do it even better. That's why you get really remarkably good battery life on the iPads and the iPhones is because it's the operating system is a dictator. It says, no, you're not. You're not waking up. Go back to sleep. On Android, it's a little more loosey-goosey. It's an open-source operating system. Anything goes. And sometimes you get this happening. The symptom is, and you nailed it, phone gets hot. That means it's working. And the battery drains fast. That means it's working hard. Find out what that is. And kill it. Frazier, Glendale, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Frazier.
How you doing? First of all, I want to congratulate you on your 1,000th episode, first of all.
Thank you very kindly.
And also that Mike and I miss you and Lisa very, very much.
Aw, Frazier and Mike have been up here. How's Mike doing? Is he feeling better?
Not too good today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Matter of fact, he's not in the room watching this.
No, give him my best. I hope he feels better.
I will. We've had some personal things, but the Microsoft stuff, I agree with you, first of all, 1,000% about your feelings on the Surface.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Microsoft, in its quarterly results last week, took almost $1 billion charge, a $900 million write-down on Surface RT. To me, that tells me Surface RT is either overpriced or just wrong. Stick with Surface Pro. Stick with Windows 8.
The big problem with it was, and you and I had discussed this before, is their big guns, their big apps, the Word, Excel, blah, blah, blah. They didn't put it out in the format that they're trying to profess to be.
The Metro, the modern UI.
The Metro apps.
Yeah. So that is one weird thing about Surface RT. When you get it, you get a tablet operating system in every respect, except it comes with Office, which is nice, but it comes with a desktop version of Office. So they have to include the desktop. And it's very confusing because you see the Metro and then you see the desktop. If you're running Word, it's in the desktop. There's two versions of Internet Explorer, one for the Metro, one for the desktop. It's just confusing. Now, Fraser, I should mention, what are you, a Microsoft certified trainer, something like that?
A certified trainer, certified system engineer.
So you have some knowledge of this.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think of Surface Pro?
I like it now. I saw your original thing on Buy It Now with Russell. And I agreed with everything Russell said.
Good. All right. That's Before You Buy, and that's on our website, twit.tv. Fraser, I'm out of time. Give my best to your friend, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, this is Dr. Dean. Happy 1,000th show. I already sent you a present. Her name is Heather. And by the way, no backsies.
He doesn't want you back. Thank you, Dr. Dean. Dr. Dean Adele, who's now retired, right, Heather?
Mm-hmm.
But you worked for him for 10 years.
At least.
And then when I stole you away, he had to retire.
That's right.
Yep.
He was nothing without me, and he had to quit.
Thank you, Dr. Dean, and thank you, Heather, for arranging that 1,000th episode of the Tech Guy Show. We started this show on KFI, the 50,000-watt blowtorch of Southern California, on January 4th, 2004. And I've missed a few shows. So, you know, technically, this is probably not my 1,000th show. It's my 995th show. So we can celebrate for the next month. But 1,000 shows, it's great. And they're all online, you know. You can download them all at techguylabs.com. Kind of fun to listen to shows 3 and 4, January 11th to 12th, because it was from CES 2004, the Consumer Electronics Show.
Wow.
And, hey, you know, 9 years ago, things were a little different. There was no iPhone.
Tell us, Grandpappy.
Yeah.
What was technology
like? We had to walk a mile to send a fax. It was hard in those days. But we loved it. 88.
We gathered around the campfire.
We had steam-powered computers in those days. And had to keep throwing in coal into the boiler. And right in the middle of an Excel recalculation, it was a thing, whole thing would just go... So, Heather, who should I talk to next on the show here?
Oh, we must help Tricia in La Jolla.
We must. Hello, Tricia. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, hello. You must. I like that.
You must. What can we do for you?
I have two 18-year-olds.
Oh, Lord. Are they twins?
They are, and they're off to college.
Oh, man. Are you a lucky person?
Yeah, well, so about...
Is this going from full house to an empty nest?
Well, no, because the girl is going to Florida.
Okay.
And my son is staying local.
That's just like the boy, isn't it? They just never leave, yeah.
That's good, because I like him.
My daughter went to New York State. My son will be going to Colorado in the fall. So we're in the same boat.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Okay. So about a year ago, we bought my son either an Asus or an Acer.
I confuse him too. They both begin with Ace.
Yeah, I know. Well, he would know, but anyway. Yeah. And he wanted to do some boy-type gaming, and it was a great deal, $599, and it does everything he wants, and we're happy.
Good.
Oh, now it's time to get my daughter a laptop to go away. She does not do gaming.
Yeah.
Basically, what she wants to do, and oh my gosh, I hope she's not listening. She just wants to lay around and watch Netflix.
Well, she's going to do great in college. Just like my son, they should meet up. They could watch Netflix together. Yeah. Well, any computer will do that.
Yeah, that. But let me say, so I'm looking for something that doesn't get too hot. Because she, even with a fan, she fried her old Toshiba.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's not good to lie around with any laptop on a blanket, right?
No.
Because it's insulating the bottom. And you'll notice laptops have feet so that there's some air beneath them, because that's usually where the airflow goes. Acer makes some very nice little inexpensive laptops. It's probably what you got your son as an Acer. Asus's are nice, and they're maybe a little bit more expensive. Okay. Is she Windows or Mac? Does she care?
Oh, well, we are not... we're rich, and so we're going with Windows.
Okay.
And I have some specifications because we've been trying to decide for a while. So I listen to you all the time, and I was hoping to wait for 8.1.
Well, she'll get it around September, right? And she'll get it automatically. It'll be a free download, so it's not a big deal. She'll get, you know, it'll get better in September. So that's not a big deal.
Okay, and we definitely want the touchscreen.
Yeah.
And because you said if you're
makes a big difference.
A computer, you got it. It's time
Yeah. You know? On Windows 8, especially, it makes a big difference.
Okay, and I'm thinking an i5.
Yeah, that's about right. So the i3 is artificially hobbled so that Intel could offer a cheaper chip. The i5 is kind of the sweet spot. i7 is more than most people need. I like the i5. I think 4 gigs of RAM is fine. You don't need 8. Now, one thing that you'll notice with Windows 8 laptops is there are two kind of classes of screen. And there's the lower res, I think it's 1366 by 768. I think that's too low resolution. But it costs more to get a higher resolution screen. In general, if you're getting the higher resolution 1080p screen, everything else will be upgraded as well. It'll be higher. It'll be a better quality machine. I think sometimes people go too cheap, and it ends up costing you more because it's not well made. I went to the computer talk at my son's college orientation, and the IT guy said something I really liked. He said, "You're going to be tempted to get a consumer-grade laptop because they're cheaper. Everybody sells them. Dell, everybody." He says, "Don't. Get a business-grade laptop. In the long run, it will save you money because it's somewhat more quality." Now, I understand you're going to have budget issues. But I think that there's an Acer in your price range. Just get the higher-res screen if you can afford it.
And I should just look for that and then everything else?
Everything else will be upgraded along with it because they say, well, if we're going to put a better screen in, we better put better quality components in.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're really budget constrained, then it's okay to get the 1366 by 768. It's just, boy, I find that kind of a low resolution, I have to say. I would like to see... And all the computers are coming out now with higher resolution screens. I would like to see a higher resolution on the screens. It just looks better. It's easier to read. She can get more stuff on it. The Acer that I use is really good, but I think out of your price range is the S7. And that's a little pricey. I think it's about $1,500.
No.
You're already paying two college tuitions. Let's not go crazy here.
Exactly.
Yes, I don't blame you. I understand.
Okay,
so
better Acer than...
Yeah, Acer. What's nice about Acer is they offer a very wide range of prices. They do make very low-cost computers that are decent. So just get the nicest Acer you can, I guess.
Okay.
All right?
That
good
leads
luck
me in the right
and
direction.
Good luck to your daughter. I think you're going to be spending around $600.
I can do that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
My great pleasure. Congratulations.
Thanks.
You got two of them out the door.
Yeah.
Nice job. That's. I tell you, when you get to that point, you can take a sigh, a deep breath. At least you got them through high school.
Yeah, that was sure.
Now the tuition comes. Thanks, Tricia. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Taylor in Corona, you're next. Leo Laporte here. Hi, Taylor.
Hey, sup, Leo.
Hey, Taylor, what's up?
Congratulations on 1,000 episodes.
Thank you, sir.
I'd just like to say, I'd like to congratulate Netflix for the Emmy nominations.
Yeah, they got two Emmy nominations. Isn't that amazing? This is Netflix is not known as a company that makes television, but they got nominations for House of Cards, which is the amazing Kevin Spacey show. He got nominated. The show got nominated. His co-star, Robin Wright Penn, well, she's just Robin right now, got nominated. Really excellent show. And the other one, of course, Arrested Development. They brought back and did, I think, an extra season. Less great, but still, I'm glad they got 13 total nominations and or 14. They deserved it.
Yeah, in the traditional media world where NBC and cable networks dominate the entire thing, it's nice to know that a simple online provider could provide content that that's Emmy nominated.
I agree with you, Taylor. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by ShareFile.com, the best way to share files. I use ShareFile to share audio files. In fact, I should have set, I don't know why I didn't set you up, Heather, with ShareFile, because then you could have easily shared the audio files with me, and I wouldn't have had to search through my email. Email attachments, there's all sorts of problems. You saw, I mean, I'm trying to find one. I can't find it. Probably bounced back, right? Because in many email systems, you can't send large files. Of course, they're not secure. They're not protected, and you lose control of it as soon as you email it. ShareFile solves all these problems. That's why a lot of businesses now, most of the Fortune 500 are using ShareFile. If you go to ShareFile.com, you could find out more about it. In fact, I can give you 30 days free, and that's the best way to learn all about ShareFile. It's secure, uses SSL. It is not via an email attachment. Instead, you send a secure link. Although, if you've got the Outlook plugin to you, it'll look just like email. What I do is I get a link, and you could do this on your smartphone, on your tablet as well. I'll get a link to the file and send that link. Now, one of the things I can do when I send the link is I could specify, okay, I want their email address before they use it. I could password protect it. I could say it's only available for download once or for 1 week or 1 day or 1 year. You could complete control. And it's customized for a variety of industries. So here's what I want you to do. 30 days free, but you've got to do a special thing here. At ShareFile.com, click the radio listeners click here link at the top. Don't use the other link for the... There are two free trial links. And that way you can put the offer code TECHGUY in here. And if you want, you don't have to, but choose an industry. It'll customize it for your industry. Everything from accounting to video to legal to medical. Yes, it's HIPAA compliant and on and on and on. ShareFile.com. It's the best way to share files in business, and it's exactly what I do every week. Oh, yeah. I hope that's true. I love that song. Thank you, Nathan. Nathan Staten, our new musical director, replaced Kyle Benham, who is doing quite well, I might add. Those people were asking how he's doing. 8888-ASK-LEO's the number. You'll be calling Heather Hamana, who is taking the calls. Anybody ever call you Heather Hamana, 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 Hamana?
I think so. I can't remember who that was. See how they just isn't left
that
my
what the
brain.
Yeah? I know I'm not surprised. Isn't that what the Three Stooges would say when they hamana 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 hamana?
I think.
Couldn't think of what to say. Or no, it was Jackie Gleason. That was Jackie Gleason. Hamana 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 hamana.
Right.
8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. What should we do? Let's see. How about Mike in Bedford? Is it okay if I talk to Mike in Bedford, New York? Too late. I already am. Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, Leo?
Not much. What's up with you?
I just wanted to first congratulate you on your 1,000th episode.
Thank you.
And also, I just want to say, big fan. Watched you and Kate Patello on Screensavers and also on Tech Guy going back to ZDTV days.
Thank you. Those were the days, my friend.
Yeah.
We thought they'd never end.
Right. So I had a question about cutting the cord on my TV cable subscription. I just found out the other day that Aereo is actually available in my neck of the woods.
Oh, aren't you lucky?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Holy cow. Well, that's kind of does everything you need.
Yeah, well, I really don't watch too much TV myself, but I do have two kids, and I just want to make sure there's something in it for them.
Yeah. So let me explain what Aereo is. This was started by Barry Diller, famous Hollywood agent. And I can only think that this was his way of saying the heck with you, in more strong language, to the television networks. They've sued and lost. What he did was he was very clever. He invented or got somebody to invent dime-sized television antennas, so small that you could put an array of 1,000 of them in a box the size of a computer. You put it on a roof in Manhattan, and then you let subscribers rent an antenna. He thought this would get him around the issues of copyright violation because he's not selling content. He's only selling an antenna. And the courts have agreed. You know what? You're renting an antenna. You can't stop somebody in Bedford, New York from renting an antenna in Manhattan. That's legal. What's great is it gives you basically broadcast television out of Manhattan, high quality, and better yet, DVR capability. They do that automatically. But what I would say is that's the key to a part of cord cutting, the most difficult part to replace, which is live television. It's easy to do, and for your kids especially, they don't care from live. They're not watching the Super Bowl or the Academy Awards. They don't know about that. They care about Phineas and Ferb and the Cartoon Network, right? So the good news is all of that stuff's on Netflix. It's on Amazon. It's anywhere you can rent on Google and on iTunes, anywhere you can rent television or movies, you can get great kid content. And you give them an iPad, and they will be content for hours.
Yeah, I give my daughter my old Droid 3, and perfect. She knows how to use Netflix and YouTube for that.
You know, 3-year-olds now know how to pick up a tablet, launch an iPad, launch the operating system, launch Netflix, and go to Phineas and Ferb. I've seen kids, nonverbal kids who can't speak, can get into Phineas and Ferb on Netflix. So you're golden. So Aereo will give you a list of, if you go to Aereo, Aereo.com, will give you a list of the channels that you'll be getting in your area. But again, that's really only necessary to supplement like live sports, you know, live events, that kind of thing. Because everything else you can easily do with cutting the cord, you know, over the internet, everything except that live TV is available.
Now, I saw on Aereo's website, they said that, I don't know if it's true or not, that I had to get a Roku.
No, you don't have to. So the way Aereo works is on an iPad. So if you want to watch Aereo on your television, yeah, then you need a Roku to internetify your television. And so that way, yes. But you know what? You'll be glad you have the Roku because that will give you everything Aereo doesn't.
Gotcha.
Netflix, Amazon streaming, all of that stuff. So Roku and Aereo are a very nice combination.
Okay. And also, I was looking into the Roku just a little bit. It said that you can add channels to the Roku. I wonder if you know anything about if there's any type of like fees or anything associated.
It varies. It really varies. So obviously there's a fee for Netflix, Hulu Plus, things like that. But there are also free channels. Roku has a channel store. So when you get the Roku, you'll go to the channel store and you can browse around and see what's available. But even more than that, there are hidden channels on Roku. In the past, there have been lists of Roku channels. Looks like some company has bought this Roku-channels.com. Actually, that's a good thing because they're keeping it alive. And this has a list of all the different Roku channels, the private channels, reviews of them. So there's more than just the stuff that you see in the channel store. There are literally over 1,000 possible channels on a Roku. Just think of a Roku as an internet connection for your television. That's really what it is. And then you have to go out and you can only watch stuff that has a Roku app. For instance, you can watch Twit, my podcast network. You can even watch this show live right now in video on a Roku. But you have to add that channel to your Roku. We're in the channel store, but there are apparently hundreds, maybe thousands of channels that are not. So that's why Roku-channels.com is the thing. Roku is right now the number one device to add to your television, to internetify it. Apple TV is a good choice if you use iTunes, but only if you use iTunes. Roku has everything that Apple TV has except iTunes. So you get Apple TV so you can have iTunes. Apple TV does not have everything that Roku has. And then we were talking about the Google Chromecast. That's early days yet. Right now, it only does three things: Netflix, Google Play, and YouTube. It will do Pandora. And I think it's already sold well enough that probably a lot of other companies are going to make their apps Chromecast compatible. So Chromecast is an up-and-comer. Its advantages is $35. The cheapest Roku is $50. And the one you want probably is $99. That's the one with HDMI and Wi-Fi. So Chromecast is probably still too early. I love it, but it's limited. Get a Roku, get Aereo. You probably will have everything you could do on your cable, with the one exception, HBO, the pay channels. They're in bed with the cable companies because they can't afford not to be. So you can't use, for instance, HBO Go. HBO offers an app on the Roku, but you have to log into it through your cable company to prove that you are already paying for HBO. And not all cable companies allow that. So there are things you won't be able to get, chiefly HBO, Showtime, that kind of thing, pay cable content. Your kids, they're going to be fine. There's so much stuff for kids. And I would bet you most of the stuff that you want for your kids is available just over the internet. Even YouTube. You know, there's a Disney channel on YouTube. There's a Cartoon Network channel on YouTube. There's a lot of content. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You can find out more about the things we talk about at our website, techguylabs.com. I'll put links to Aereo and the other stuff there right now. Tyrion Lannister joins us now. I'm sorry, it's not Tyrion Lannister. It's Chris Marquardt. What do you? How'd your hair get so long in 2 weeks? I don't understand.
No, I was digitally retouching.
You hippie.
No.
Hey,
there's,
welcome.
There's a little hippie inside. Yeah.
Where were you? We missed you.
I was holding a workshop in an old abbey with 23 people, and we had 4 days of round the clock photo fun. So we do this every year, and it's fun, and we'll be in another abbey, actually in a week, in 2 weeks from now, in the UK, in Farnborough. So there's something, I don't know what it is with abbeys and me, but I just like those very silent places where you can reconcentrate.
Are they always medieval? Are they always old, or do you go to new places?
Well, the one in the UK is old. The one that I was at is even older. So I think the one that I'm going to go to is actually the resting place of Napoleon III. So it's kind of a famous place.
He wasn't as big as Napoleon I or II, but, you know.
Not really.
Yeah.
But it's a Napoleon.
He's
right?
A Napoleon. One of the Napoleons. He's the guy they named the pastry after.
Congratulations for 1,000 episodes.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to be part of this, and I'm so happy to be on the 1,000th episode. I will be gone for the next 2 weeks, but this...
Are you going to another abbey?
Yeah, that's the abbey thing I'm going to do.
Oh, man. This is good. This is good.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
At this one, I want you to get a tonsure. You know, that's where they put the bowl on your head and they shave...
No, it's not going to happen.
Which is the other way around, isn't it? They shave the top, and then you have a nice ring around...
It's not going to
happen.
Trust
All right.
me.
I think it'd be a good look for you. So we are going to do our assignment, which was the word heat. And I've been just scanning through the slideshow on Flickr at the Tech Guy group of all the images. And then we've got some wonderful images illustrating the word or concept heat. We do this each month with a different assignment. It's not a competition, just a chance for you to get out there and take some pictures. So did you pick a few that you think are memorable or worth taking a closer look at?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I was hoping for the people to illustrate the concept of heat, not just take a picture of a thermometer, but really take pictures that would make you feel the heat, right? So the first one is by TechMom10, and the title is Conversion. And it's a I don't know, grill kind of thing.
It is the hottest thing I've ever seen. Holy, we call this a fire pit.
Oh, it's a fire pit. Okay, so it's a fire pit. And, well, there are a few things about this picture. First of all, there's lots of detail in the flames, which usually they get blown out, but TechMom10 did a good job.
It's hard to take pictures of fire, actually.
It is, yeah. Well, it's hard to take pictures of fire and the surroundings at the same time.
Right, because fire is bright.
So there's I think some processing in there. Probably not HDR because you have to take multiple pictures for that. And with the moving flames, that wouldn't have worked.
You know what I like is the smoke is good too.
The smoke is good, and what I like is a very simple thing. It's an RGB picture. It has red, green, and blue. It has the basic colors in it very prominently: the green lawn, the blue sky, and the red, orange fire. So it really gives your camera sensor a workout because that also works with red, green, and blue pixels.
That's interesting. You've been paying more attention to color lately, Mr. Marquardt.
Color is very important.
Yeah.
And, good, and like obviously that. The warm color of the fire draws your attention right to it. Warm colors are always more important than cool colors like green and blue. So
that's the best fire picture I've ever seen. I mean, this is really interesting. I don't know.
So
how
the
she
next
got it.
One,
wow. Yes.
The next one by James Eakins, At the Start, and he shot that picture on, believe it or not, Impossible Film, which is a.
It looks like a Polaroid.
It's a replacement for Polaroid. It's some guys in Holland putting together, well, kind of recreating Polaroid, but with very different properties. So here you have this Polaroid kind of picture. It's an actual analog picture, a scanned one. And the way the color, yeah, I can see you
this is a Polaroid land camera.
It's a land camera, yes.
So this means he took this with a Polaroid land camera?
Well, it's more of a 600 type, the ones that go bzzzt after you take the picture.
So, it isn't a digital photograph. He just scanned it later.
No. Wow. It is a scanned one, but the way the film renders the colors is very different from the original Polaroid. So here you have this, it feels hot because it's this orange warm glow, and then it says Death Valley Road on it. Yeah. So it's a street sign with Death Valley Road. So looking at that, I'm starting to sweat right now.
This is great. It really looks like an old Polaroid too. Looks like it was taken in the 70s.
Wonderful. So there's still film, and it's still being made by a company called Impossible, the Impossible Project. So. Because it was kind of impossible. They bought an old Polaroid factory, and they put those machines back together.
Wow.
They rehired some of the old employees, and but they had to formulate new films, the chemistry, because I think they just couldn't use the old one.
It was patented, probably, yeah.
I guess so.
So this next one is, it's a hot stove.
It's by Jose Hudo Castañer, and I probably butchered that one. Name of the picture is Red Hot, and the reason I chose that is because, I mean, it's really hard. If you can take a picture of a stove, of a red hot stove, but what he did is he moved the camera, and he made this kind of a blurry thing, and just imagine it is so hot that you're starting to see everything blurred and you lose focus, and the heat does that to people. And that's one of those feelings that this image, I think, conveys very well.
I'm about to pass out just looking at it. You know, it's
isn't it right?
I'm getting woozy.
Yes, I think that was exactly the point of this picture, to make people feel that way. So. Kudos. Very good job. Very good job.
So the way we do this, we give you a concept. In this case, it was heat. We'll give you a new one in a second. And you just use that as an inspiration to go out and take photos. We'll let you submit one a week for the next 4 weeks. So you can get up to four pictures in our gallery. The gallery is on Flickr.com. That's the Yahoo photo site. It's free and it's great. And you should be a member if you're a photographer anyway. So sign up and then join the Tech Guy group. There's about, thousands of people in it now. It's great. And and you can use that Tech Guy group to submit your photo to us. What, Mr. Marquardt, this is the moment we've all been waiting for. What would you like to have the assignment be this week?
I think we'll stay with weather.
Okay. Just weather?
I think we'll stay with weather themes, and this time around it's going to be wet. So whatever
wet.
Find to do. We had lots of rain today, so
now,
wet.
No, I'm going to point out, wet doesn't have to be weather. It could just be wet.
Well, yeah. Do whatever you think wet means to you. So
right.
Looking forward to what's coming out of those.
Yeah. 1 week, 1 month to do that. Chris is going to take the next couple of weeks off because he's going to hang out with the monks.
But, sort of, yeah.
But, here's a picture of a thermometer at 104. That's heat. I think it's kind of fun. You go to the Flickr group, you can look at all the other pictures, get some inspiration. And the next one will be wet. And we aren't going to have any rain in California for a while, but we'll figure out something. Thank you, Chris.
Water coming from the tap. It should work. Thank you.
We were talking before the show began about the new Canon D70, which is just, is it announced? Can you hear me? I think we lost him.
I'm here. I'm here. Oh, okay. I can hear you. Sorry. We had a short blip here. Canon 70D is
70D.
Actually a very interesting camera because they have a new technology to focus while doing video. You remember with the current DSLRs that do video, you have to focus mostly manually because then it's a kind of a weird thing and it flickers the picture. And they have come up with a new technology where they kind of split every pixel in two and use those to focus. So I'm looking forward to getting my hands on one of those.
Good. We'll get a review as soon as Chris does. It is an APS-C size sensor, so it's not a full-frame sensor, but $1,200 and available soon, and I'm very intrigued. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
ChrisMarquardt.com, the place to go if you want to know more about his workshops. It's a... I'll tell you in a minute. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the tech guy brought to you by rock and roll. See, yes, I haven't lost it. I can still talk up a vocal like nobody's business. 8888-ASK-LEO. I started doing radio in 1976. So that's a lot of time. That's like 5 years I've been doing this. And no, joking. That's like 37 years. And if I, and for a long time, I did five shows a week, 250 shows a year. I don't know. You do the math. This is like my 20,000th episode, but my 1,000th tech guy episode. You're listening to it right now. Heather Hammond, keeping me company. Hammond, Hammond, Hammond. You have a person I should speak to on the phone here.
You're going to love Jason in Cooper, Texas.
I better. your job's on the line here, Heather. No, just kidding.
Jason, hey, be good.
Be good, Jason. Hey, Jason, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Congratulations on your 1,000th episode.
Thank you, sir.
I've been a fan of yours all the way back from 98.
Well, yeah, the original screensavers, huh?
Yes.
Well, thank you for listening all those years. I hope I haven't bored you. What can I do for you?
I have a question about I have a HTC Evo 3D on Sprint.
Yes, sir.
And I want to route it and put Sygena mod on it.
Yeah, you know, as when you get these older Android phones, it really is probably, especially HTC, which does not update its version of Android very often or very fast. It's not a bad idea to put a more recent firmware on it. And you can do that because these are computers. I mean, think about it. You could put a new operating system on a PC. Why can't you put a new operating system on a phone? But it does have to be designed specifically for that hardware. So you will need to find a root procedure and a ROM that are specifically for not only your HTC Evo 3D, but from the carrier that you bought it from, AT&T or Sprint or whoever. So you're going to look for that. The best place to go, in my opinion, is xda-developers.com. This is a website that specializes in Android. And where I would go is their forums. So if you go to xda-developers.com, click forums, and they literally have a search box that says find your device on this forum. So you'll enter in the HTC Evo 3D. That was an interesting phone because it literally had two cameras, and it took 3D pictures, which was, I guess, not something that drove the market particularly. But anyway, so you search for that, and it will tell you two things. The first thing is how to root it. Rooting it is simply the process of giving yourself administrator permissions on the phone. It is generally easy to do on Android phones. Certainly, Google has always had the policy that shouldn't be forbidden. HTC generally makes that possible. Occasionally, a manufacturer will do something called locking the bootloader that doesn't stop rooting but just makes it harder. So I'm not sure what the status is of the 3D. I never had one, but generally speaking, if you go to XDA Developers, you could find instructions on how to root any Android phone. Follow those instructions very carefully. It is a little bit of a risky process, depending on how it's rooted, because sometimes it could cause a non-working phone. They call it a bricked phone because it works as a telephone about as well as a brick would, which is to say not at all. But it's, you know, if you follow the instructions precisely, and often there's YouTube videos and so forth, you're usually all right. Now, once you've rooted it, you'll have put a new recovery program on the phone. There are a couple of different ones, Clockwork Mods Recovery or TORP. And once that's on there, Then it's a simple process of downloading a ROM, and you have many, many to choose from, especially the older the phone, the more likely. Make sure, again, that you get exactly the right ROM, the ROM that's for that model and even that carrier, because Sprint does different things than AT&T does, than Verizon does, and you want to make sure your ROM is exactly right. Match the serial number if you can. Usually, ROMs won't install on the wrong phone, but let's not take a chance here. Again, this is another way you could brick your phone. So you'll download that ROM. You'll store it somewhere on the phone, in the storage of the phone. Then you'll boot into this modified recovery. The reason you had to modify it is the modified recoveries allow you to install different software. You know, the built-in recovery just says, fix the phone, get it back to the way it was. Doesn't give you any choice. You'll probably want to, in this process, then the modified recoveries will let you do this, back up the existing ROM in case you don't really like what happened to the phone, the way it works now. You want to go back to the old Evo 3D. If you back it up, then you always can go back. You can even unroot it if you have to. Understand, when you root a phone, generally you cannot do over-the-air updates. You've modified the phone in such a way that it's no longer under warranty, and the company does not offer you updates. You're responsible now for keeping it up to date. Having said that, it's usually pretty easy to do. I root most of my Android phones. I keep one phone generally stock that is unmodified so that I can see what the companies are doing to update it. For instance, I might have a stock Samsung Galaxy S4 because I'm curious. I wonder when Samsung is going to update it to 4.3. But generally speaking, I root them. It just gives you more capability. There are a number of ROMs. Most people tend to use Cyanogen Mod CM. And the current version, I think, is 10.1 or 10.2. And that'll get you right up to the 4.2.2 version of Android, which is nice. Big improvement. But again, it's limited by what your phone's capable of. Some of the older phones just couldn't handle it, so forth, so on. I'm not going to give you specific instructions for any phone because it's too easy to make a mistake. I don't want to turn your phone into a brick. I'm going to let the folks at XDA Developers do that. XDA-developers.com. There are other sites, but that's the one I really trust. Really trust and love. 8888, ask Leo. Penny in Sacramento, you're next. Hi, Penny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Penny.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey there.
Yay. Hey, I'm putting together a backyard home theater.
Outdoors. How exciting.
Yeah. So I want to watch movies on a big 16-foot by 9-foot screen in my backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'll need two things. You'll need a screen and you'll need a projector.
Yeah, I've ordered the screen.
Good. Is it a regular screen, or is it inflatable?
It's a regular screen. I got it from Carl's. It's made out of this flexi white
Perfect.
Material.
Perfect.
Yeah.
They actually make like jumpy jumps. They make inflatable screens.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's kind of annoying, and you have to have the blower blow air into it and stuff. And so yeah, get a good screen. Now you got to get a projector, and there are things to consider here.
Mm-hmm.
They often use what we want to do is get a projector that's going to be bright enough that it can fill the screen and be seen. Because as you would imagine, the farther you get from the screen, two things happen. As you get farther from the screen, the picture gets bigger. That's good. It also gets dimmer. Mm-hmm. So when you get a 16-foot by 9-foot picture, you need a pretty powerful projector to make that light. Now, you're going to be doing it at night, I presume.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be, something. I mean, it can be a little dark because it's going to be dark outside. But what you're going to want to look at is you're probably going to spend more than you would for a projector in the house. You're going to get a projector that has a long throw and has a lot of brightness. Epson makes some cinema. You know, the other thing is you could get a PowerPoint projector, but you probably want one that's designed to do TV. And the reason is it'll have an HDMI port you can plug into it, so you can put your Blu-ray player. Is that what is the source of the content on there?
Well, it's going to be all of my files are on Mac Mini,
okay.
And there's a Dropbox serving it, so.
Yeah. So you want a home? You're going to want a home entertainment projector because it'll handle the, Mac Mini's input.
Mm-hmm.
You're also going to need speakers. Some of these have speakers built in, some of the Epsons, but they're not really loud. You're going to want to set up a stereo.
Yeah.
So you're going to want to look for something like that. Epson makes both pro and home cinema, and you're just going to have to look in here to see if the pro, or rather the home, has enough brightness. It might. Now, they range from about $600 to about $50,000. I'm not necessarily saying you're going to spend $50,000, but you're going to have to get one that's designed to throw that far. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Great idea. Go to meeting. Indeed, oh, yes, indeed. Well, that was supposed to be Ben Fonctoris, but it's not. So I will I will fix that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It sounded like me noodling around on the microphone. 1,000th episode, and yes, I have three people saying thanks and congratulations, and that's good. I'm happy. I'm not asking for more. 8888, ask Leo, one of them, the great legendary rock and roll writer Ben Fonctoris, and I must have saved that out in an unusual format, but I'll fix it. Heather, thank you for getting all of those. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Sam in Edmonton, California. No, Canada. Hello, Sam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hello, Sam. How are you?
Thank you. Long-time listener and watcher of you.
Thank you.
I wonder if you can give me a hand.
I will do my best.
I have a basement full of different machines, thanks to you. I've used all the operating systems, but recently I had to upgrade because all my other computers were sort of on their way out. So I have a Windows 8 machine that I bought from Dell, which is a touchscreen 24-inch.
Very nice. Sounds good.
And I thought I'd get real smart, and when I was setting it all up, I partitioned my hard drive because I thought that was a smart thing to do.
But it's not a bad thing to do. It's not a bad thing to do, but it's what happened.
Well, they said it's a dumb thing to do.
No.
Because as what's happened with my XP, which I've been running for years, one side's gotten full and the other one's empty, and the machine's not good
yes.
now.
We talked to a young lady yesterday who had the same problem. This happened for a long time because when the first multi-gigabyte drives came out, Windows couldn't handle it. The operating system and the hardware couldn't handle it. So that you'd get a C and a D drive on a single thing. The problem is, of course, it's hard to predict how big C needs to be and how big D needs to be, and invariably, one drive would get full and the other one's got lots of room, and that's the situation you're in right now.
Well, that's part of it, because what happened is, I've got, it's a fancy machine, it's an i5, it's got 8 gigs of RAM and 2 terabytes of hard drive.
Yes.
When I tried to partition it, it wouldn't let me go more than 50-50. But the thing now is I want to bring it back to its original form because it's empty. I haven't loaded anything onto it yet.
Yeah.
So I called Dell, and they said, unfortunately, that's not covered in the warranty. I have to figure that out for myself.
All right. So here's the first question. On all Dells, there's a hidden partition. I don't know if you saw it. I presume you did not delete it.
No. But what I did, I backed up before I did anything else, I backed it up onto a flash drive on their system recovery media.
Fine. Yeah, you're fine. So
I have it on the flash drive. I just am scared what to do before
No. The easiest, since you haven't done anything to the computer, the easiest way to get it back is just to repartition to a single partition and restore from the backup that you made.
So would I have to do both? Or I thought the system recovery flash drive would allow me to start up in the flash drive, and it would reinstall it to the state that it was in when I backed it up onto the flash drive.
It would, but it does not repartition.
It would still leave it as a.
Yeah, you'd have a C and a D drive. So what you want to do is fire up that partitioner, and you could do that as part of the install. By the way, it's in the options as you're installing Windows 8. In the options, it'll say, "Oh yeah, well, what would you like me to do with this drive?" Now the key is do not delete the hidden partition. That's really important. You want to keep that there. That actually has Windows on it, but you can restore from it. In fact, Windows 8 has a very nice kind of recovery feature that'll use that hidden partition. So I would do that. If you had put data on there, there are what we call non-destructive partitioning programs that would allow you to resize partitions or even delete partitions. But in this case, I don't think you need to worry about that. Ease US makes a very good one that's free. EASEUS.com. They pronounce it Ease Us. I don't know what that means. But in this case, you don't need to go to that effort because there's nothing to save. You just want to get it back to the way it came from Dell. So run the installer, run the recovery disk. Right before you actually do any work, I believe there'll be an option to, and you might have to press O. In Windows 7, you had to press O and you get the options. I'm not sure in Windows 8. But there will be an option to look at the drive, fix, delete the partition you created. Make sure that the C partition covers the whole drive except for that hidden partition. And you'll see a hidden partition in this option. Don't delete that. So you'll have two partitions, one small, one large. Then continue the install and you'll be right back to where you were. That's the right way to do it. There are ways to shrink and expand and delete partitions non-destructively. And that's a good idea if you've already used the computer enough to want to save what you've done. But in this case, it doesn't matter. So don't fear. Fear not. You're fine. And you even have the tools you need to do it. Juan, New London, Connecticut. You're next. Hi, Juan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Hey, congrats on your 1,000th show. I know it's probably way more than that, but still.
Total is many more, and I'm going to do some math before the show ends, and I'll tell you the actual number. But it's the 1,000th tech guy. Let's put it that way.
Okay, cool. Well, I've been a fan since the Tech TV days as well.
Thank you.
98. Been legally blind since I was 14. I'm 33 now. Been into computers last 8 years accessibility things, and I just didn't get into it. But even before then, I was watching your show and keeping up with stuff, and I always seem to keep up with all the new stuff, even though I can't get it.
Yeah, if you weren't into computers, but you were watching the screensavers, well, that's awesome. That's
great. Yeah, I was definitely.
You've learned some stuff by osmosis.
Yeah, definitely. And just keep it in the back of my mind. And also, I tried calling in to win some Netflix 2-week trials.
Oh, yeah.
I remember trying to do
that. Yeah, we were doing that. Yeah. That was in the earliest days of Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the main thing I was calling about is I have several questions, but you get quite a few calls of people calling that are recently losing their vision or visually impaired.
Yes.
And you can hear the distress in their voice, and they're trying to figure out what can I do to get my independence back and have accessibility.
Yes.
And most of the time, people are told to use JAWS, which you recommend is a good program. But if you're on a budget and you can't afford a $2,000 program, what are you going to do?
Right.
And that's Windows.
So what do you recommend?
Well, JAWS is great if you could get an agency that could, pay for it up front and they have you use it. But NVDA works as well and sometimes does some things even better than JAWS.
NVDA.
Non-Visual Desktop Access. And
non-visual
that's free.
And that's free. Awesome. It's open source?
Yes. And they're always updating, and they actually been trying to add OCR, because the way JAWS works, when some websites have graphics, it can't read the graphics because, of course, it needs actual text to read.
So you'll find this at N as in non, V as in visual, yeah. nvaccess.org, yeah. And it's a free download. Yeah. That is very impressive. And, I'm glad you called, because I don't feel qualified to say one way or the other which is the best. I know a lot of people use JAWS. It's thousands of dollars. NV Access, if it's free, is fabulous. Have you ever tried Orca? Because that's another open source screen reader.
Well, that's another thing I was going to tell you about. I've been kind of off and on with computers, so I haven't gotten into stuff. But recently, I've been listening even more to your show, and I was trying to. I was like, you know what? He always talks about Linux and play with Linux and Ubuntu.
Yeah.
So I put Ubuntu on my computer, and I've been doing research. And
wow.
And Orca is a screen reader for
Linux.
Linux.
Yeah.
Yes. It's specifically for that. It still needs some work, but it's usable. I've been for Chrome on there.
We're running out of time. Juan, I thank you. I really appreciate the tip, because I don't feel qualified, but I'm glad you called in. NVAccess.org. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, this is Ben Fontorres from the San Francisco Chronicle and Quello.com saying congratulations to Leo Laporte on 1,000 shows. That is a lot of bites. You've been a treasure trove of info and advice all these years. Thank you. You're like my computer guy, only with a much better voice. As for Heather, don't even get me started. Just congratulations to the entire The Tech Guy team. Here's to hundreds more bites. Is that a lot?
That's a megabyte, Ben. Thank you. Very nice. Ben Fontorres of the San Francisco Chronicle. Leo Laporte, the Tech IR, 1,000th episode. Indeed it is. Phone number is 8888-ASK. Leo, if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Let's go to Alexander in Ontario, California. You're next. Hi, Alexander.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Happy 1,000 episode.
Wow. I've been doing this since before you were born. You know that?
Yeah.
How old are you, Alexander?
I'm only 11.
Well, let me think, actually. No, I started this almost 10 years ago, so you were one when I started doing this. But I bet you that you've been listening since you were two. Right?
No.
No. What can I do? I tried. I really did. What can I do for you, Alexander?
So I'm calling about backup. My family has a lot of family photos we've taken over the years.
Of course they do, yeah.
And well, we got a Mac to replace our, 7-year-old PC.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried iCloud to back up the photos because it's built right into iPhoto.
Yeah.
And it didn't really work well. It stopped to 1,000. So I'm wondering what you'd recommend for all those photos.
Yeah, PhotoStream is good for if you've got an iPhone or an iPad. It will back up your photos as you take them, and that's kind of nice. But for backing up photos, I prefer something a little more robust. There are a few ways for you to do this. You can do a traditional backup, of course. You know, just an external hard drive or Carbonite, our sponsor, that kind of thing, and back it up that way. But there are also a lot of backups that are photo specific. So I'll give you a few choices. For instance, Facebook now will back up your photos. So will Google Plus. Now, this won't help you with existing photos, but photos that you take on your camera or your iPad from now on. I use a paid service, $140 a year for the pro version called SmugMug. And what I do is I upload my best pictures to SmugMug and then also upload the original RAW files. So I have permanent copies there. So lots of online solutions like that. Flickr will do it now. They give you a free terabyte of storage. That's probably more than you need, a terabyte. The advantage of doing that on Flickr is you can share it with other family members and you can keep it private, too.
So with Flickr, we get 1 terabyte?
Yeah.
That's as big as the Mac hard drive itself.
Right. That should last you a good long time.
Okay.
Now, the drawback is you can't upload them all at once. Okay? Because they have a limit on how much bandwidth you can use.
A month?
A month, yeah. But over time, you can get them all uploaded there.
Yeah, you probably won't get all those photos.
How many pictures? How many pictures? Are you, Alexander, are you the tech guy in your family?
Yeah.
That's awesome. How many pictures do you have? How much do you need to back up?
Well, I actually didn't figure out the gigabyte because iPhoto's not too good about that.
Yeah.
But I know it's what we have right now on the Mac that's not backed up to external hard drives is about, I don't know, a year worth?
Okay. Yeah, that's not too much. That's not too much. It's a nice idea, by the way, to go through them. Get mom and dad, and you could do it too, to go through them and delete the stupid ones. There's probably half of those are out of focus, fuzzy, pointing at the ground, that kind of thing. Get rid of those. No point in backing them up. The other thing that's great is Time Machine. Apple has a built-in backup solution that's really quite good. I wouldn't just use Time Machine, but I certainly would. I would use it with Flickr, in conjunction with Flickr or Carbonite or some other off-site backup. The two together would really give you a lot of storage. But one thing to remember, Alexander.
Yes?
Once you back up a photo, don't delete the original on your hard drive because then it's not a backup. A backup means more than one copy, right?
Yeah, we won't. We're not planning on deleting it. That's why we have a Mac with more storage.
You're smart. Yeah, Alexander, you're smarter than most grown-ups. Most grown-ups would say, oh, I just copied the picture to the backup hard drive there. I'm going to delete the original. And then the backup hard drive dies, and then you go, where's my backup? Well, that was it. So you're very smart, Alexander. More than you, any backup has to be at least two copies. Ideally, three copies of everything, okay? So that's why Time Machine plus Flickr plus your originals on the hard drive, that's a good way to go. And you know, a nice thing about iPhoto, you could back up just the iPhoto file, the pictures file in your My Pictures folder, and that's everything.
Yeah, well, I noticed with iPhoto, to back it up with Time Machine, when we're opening photos from iPhoto, we can't exactly get directly into iPhoto.
No, that's right.
You have to go in and export all the photos to another folder.
Yeah,
is that
well,
the case for Time Machine?
No, Time Machine will back up that iPhoto folder. The good news is inside, and you figured this out too. Boy, you're smart. Inside the, a lot of adults don't know this. There is, it's not really. It says one file, the iPhoto file, but it's really a what they call a package, which is a kind of a fancy way of making a folder, a hidden folder. So if you right click or control click on the iPhoto package, you'll see that inside it are the originals.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that nice? And so you knew this because you just told me. So you can copy that originals folder out. You're smart. So there's a number of really good ways to do this. I think you get the idea, though, right? One should be next to your computer, one should be in your computer, and one should be on the internet. And that's where Flickr is a great deal.
Because I thought about iPhoto and how, wait a minute, if we cannot get to iPhoto, what's going to happen if the Mac dies?
You're so smart. Now, iPhoto has built-in exporting to Flickr, you know. So every month, just do another 200 photos, and before you know it, you'll be done.
Okay.
Thank you, Alexander.
Thank you for all your help.
You're welcome. I think I'm going to burst into tears. You want a job, Alexander? Heather, you have a little soft spot for the young callers. I noticed that. You put those right through, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So cute.
He's so cute. So cute.
I don't want to be 11 again.
Shadowy Wind in our chat room says, that kid's smarter than my boss. That's what Heather's saying, too. Wait a minute. let's move on. Mike in Glendale, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Leo. Can we talk about Windows 7 for a minute?
Yes. Yes.
Here I am. I'm an innocent user. All I do is a little word processing, and I write magazine articles from time to time. And one day, when I try and make a folder, I'm given the option of making a briefcase. What is that? I say to myself. What am I going to do with this? But like a fool, I put what I need in the briefcase. Then I come back 3 hours later, and I want to put something else in the briefcase, and it says, oh, no, your briefcase is in use on another computer.
Oh, no.
You have to turn it off on the other computer and then come back. And I'm thinking, other computer?
I don't have one. Hang on. We're going to take a break. We'll talk about briefcase. Holy cow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So poor Mike in Glendale. Oh, I hear the phone ringing. Hello?
Hey, you turn.
Hello, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Leo.
Sorry, that's okay. I don't care. So Mike did something that any reasonable, naive Windows user would do. He stored his file in the briefcase. It's a revelation to me that Microsoft still has the briefcase. This is something Microsoft added in, I think, Windows XP. For synchronizing files. This is in the days. I'll give you an idea of how old the idea is. You would save a file in a briefcase, then copy it to a floppy disk. Then take the floppy disk to work. Put the floppy disk in the computer at work. Open the briefcase. Work on the file. Then save it back into the briefcase on the floppy disk. Then take it back home. That's why they called it a briefcase. It was a way of synchronizing files across multiple computers. Didn't require a network. In fact, it predates the internet. That's how old it is. It might have been Windows 95, Windows 98. I can't remember where briefcase came about. So what's happened here is you don't have multiple computers, you're saying.
Well, I've been so lucky I escaped it all these years.
I didn't even know it was still in Windows 7. They have taken it out, thankfully, in Windows 8.
Well, close, but I'm not convinced I need Windows 8. But seriously.
No, it doesn't. That's, yes. You don't have, yes. So what you've done is you've saved it in a file that's designed for synchronizing to another computer.
Leo, all I want to do is take Windows 7 and not have briefcases.
I know. Never use it again. But
I
now
turn them off.
Well, just save it as a regular file. But the real key is now you've put it in a briefcase and you can't open it. Right?
Well, there's that. But what I'm saying now is if I go into a folder and I want to make a folder inside of it, I don't even have the option to make a new folder.
Oh, you do. It doesn't. Yes, you do. You must. They didn't. You're saying briefcase has taken over everything.
No, what I'm saying is that if I go into a folder and I right-click, I have my choice of new things, like shortcuts and all sorts of other things, but there is no option for a folder. I cannot make a new folder in an existing folder.
Well, that's another problem entirely. I don't know what that is. That's not right.
I went on to Google and I said, how do I correct this? And the first thing I learned was that you can't turn off some sync program that Windows has in it. And then there's a bunch of options to change the registry, which I'm not too hot to do. And
stop. Stop. Please do not. This is the road that could end you. You could end up with a non-functioning computer. Do not follow this thread. Do not unravel this sweater, okay? No more pulling on this thread. Something is wrong if you can't, if the very first item isn't create a new folder, or you can't right-click on the folder and select new folder, that's nothing to do with suitcase. Make sure you're not inside the suitcase. You're not inside. This is anywhere, any folder. You navigate around.
Anywhere, anything. I can plug a flash drive into this computer and it won't let me make a folder on it.
And are you getting it from the file? Are you going into the file menu in Windows Explorer and looking for new?
No, I'm doing it from, like, when you open a folder using, you know, you go to the C prompt. Excuse me. You go to the C drive on the desktop, and you open that, and then you go down into folders through that using that route.
So you've got a window open. At the top, there's a menu. Click the file and select new. That's for sure there. If it's not there, then I don't know what the heck's wrong with your Windows, but it's not normal. I think you're looking in the wrong spot. File new in the menus. And if it's not there, I understand sometimes you can lose it in the right click. That's a context-sensitive menu. It's easy to remove by accident, remove commands. Not so easy, but it can. But so don't use right-click. Go to the File menu and select New Folder. You should have no trouble. And if you do, then you need to reinstall Windows because something's seriously wrong. Or at least repair it. Try a System Restore. I think it's user error. I'm pretty sure that's still there. Not to besmirch you in any way, Mike, but that's probably there. David in Rancho Cucamonga or Rancho Cuckoo? Where is it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Are you in Rancho Cucamonga, David?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Heather's just playing with me when she wrote Rancho Cuckoo.
Okay. Well, I'm a member of a bunch of business networking groups, and one of my groups, a lot of people didn't know about social media.
Oh, wow.
I did 15-minute presentations on social media, all the different sites.
Good.
Not really my business, but I know how to use it, so I was teaching everybody else how to use it. Well, now all of a sudden, I'm getting all these calls. Oh, this button's not there. You said this was there. How do
There's no create new folder in the menu.
Exactly. And you know, I'm trying to explain over the phone what to do. And, you know, some of these people, they're not really computer literate. They're just, like, trying to push their way through it. And I need a way to access their computer. I know other companies that they call in to me and they say, hey, Dave, go to this website, boom, we'll get access to your computer, and we'll show you everything. I need a way to do that economically because I'm not getting paid to teach these people this, and this isn't my business. You know, I'm not a tech repair guy. I just need to access their computer, show them where to go, and say, there it is. Thank you very much.
Have you seen the video of John Mayer, the folk star, folk singer, explain to his dad how to use the computer? Somebody got him on the street outside of a concert, and he's like, dad, Like, let me see. I think I have a recording here of it. Let's see. This is... I don't know how well you can hear this. TMZ got this. John Mayer is talking to his dad. There's a little bit of street noise, so I don't know.
You know where system preferences are?
He says, you know where system preferences are? System preferences.
Okay. What do you see? Okay, top left of your screen. Dad,
she says, do what I'm telling you to do. Dad, top left of your screen. Anyway, we've all been there.
Well, I was going to bring up the Saturday Night Live skit where the computer tech guy, every time I go to help somebody, it's like, move out of the way. Just let me do it.
Yeah, let me do it. And then he goes, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
No, I think remote access is a very good solution. What I use is probably more professional than you need, which is go to assist. And I set this up with my mom because this is that's a very good example of, you know, I could talk her through it, but it's going to take 10 times longer. So most of the time I try to, cause I want her to understand how to do it. But sometimes I just have to say, okay, mom, in effect, get out of the way. Another good one is TeamViewer. That one's free for some solutions. Log me in, Go to Assist and Go to My PC. Our sponsors, Citrix, those are the pro versions. Google Plus Hangouts even let you share screens. So there are more and more ways to do it. If it's just occasionally, TeamViewer is a great free choice. If you're going to do it like semi-professionally or professionally, then I would get GoToAssist.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a professional. It's like they call me up once a week and I'm in the middle of work.
Oh, I know.
Like,
so yeah, you made a big mistake.
Yeah, I know. I'm their resource now.
Yeah. Hey, this guy, he gave us a speech on social media. So now for the rest of his life, we're going to call him.
That's it.
You know, you have my permission to tell them, call the tech guy.
Oh, yeah, I could do that. That would be even better.
Hey, you know, I don't really know how to do that. But, you know, I know who does. There's this guy on the radio. Let's call Leo.
That will be.
You have my permission. I'm here anyway.
Thank you very much. Also, I'm moving all of my computer data to the cloud, and I'm thinking about getting a Surface Pro. Opinion on the Surface Pro.
I don't think it's the best Windows 8 out there. It is made by Microsoft, so that gives it a certain cachet. But I think there are other better Windows 8 solutions than the Surface Pro. It's only really if you want a tablet that is convertible. Look at the Lenovo's, the Yoga. Look at the Acer S7. There are much better Windows 8 choices. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, it's Andy Dean here. I want to say congrats to Leo on your 1,000th show. Way to go. Awesome stuff, Leo. Later.
Hey, Leo. Joe Pags here from the weekend. Congratulations. Now, what is this blue screen all over my computer?
Thanks, Pags. Thanks, Andy. Leo Laporte, I'm staying alive, I hope. Knocking on wood. 1,000 episodes. That's a good feeling, actually, to make 1,000. And I'm glad you're here for it. 8888 Ask Leo. We go back to the telephones. Actually, we were talking to Dana in Rancho Cucamonga. Hi, Dana. Still there.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
Good. What can I do for you?
Well, the Elgato ITV.
Love it.
Love it?
Yep.
Okay. Now, I'm not real good with all this electronic stuff. Am I able to just watch that on my MacBook Pro, or can I get that hooked up to my RCA big screen TV?
It's not for a big screen. It's for a computer. So what it is a TV tuner and a dongle.
Okay.
It's a USB dongle. So it has to plug into a USB port, and then you have to run their software. That's why you can't do it on your big screen TV. That will communicate with the dongle. The dongle itself is just, you know, it's the easiest way to understand this is to think about what a television is. It's really two different things, two parts put together. Part one is a display, just like your computer display. It's just a dumb screen that some signal goes into and it displays it. Part two on most televisions is a tuner. That's the thing that connects to your cable or your antenna and says, I'm going to channel 12 and I'm going to watch, or I'm going to go to the HDMI and see what's on there. The tuner is what's in the Elgato. And what it means is you can turn a computer into a television screen, but you have to have that software.
Okay. But the software, I ordered this thing. And
it comes with the software.
Yeah, I was reading up on it.
Yeah,
like, oh,
it's
no,
the
I
best.
I'm just going to do what I want to do.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It's not for a television. Now, that's what, for instance, a Roku would do, or the Google Chromecast would do, or a device with an HDMI port. Those are internet-connected tuners. You have a tuner in your television, right? So you, so you could connect an antenna to your television, and the tuner would pick the channel. You could. The cable box has a tuner in it, so you could connect a cable box to the television. Then the television, just being used as a dumb monitor, the tuner's in the cable box or satellite box. What do you want to do?
I want to record the football on Sundays for my wife, because she loves it, and she works during the day on Sundays.
Perfect.
And then play it back, but she probably doesn't want to watch it. She says she don't want to watch
right.
it on the computer.
So you're going to separate the functions. The record is done on the computer because it's got a hard drive. It's got a tuner now, thanks to the Elgato. You tune into you have to connect your antenna or whatever it is you watch TV through to the Elgato, right?
Okay.
Are you watching antenna or are you watching on cable?
I'm watching on satellite.
Satellite. Okay, so your satellite box, you're basically making a DVR out of your computer.
Okay.
Your satellite box will connect into the Elgato. The Elgato, you'll have to set it up to work with the satellite box using the software. You'll record the game. Now the game's on the hard drive. Now you have to play it on the TV. And how you do that will really depend on the TV. Some TVs, you could put the game on a USB stick, plug it into the back of the TV, and play it that way.
Okay.
Some TVs...
HDMI ports.
It has HDMI, so... you need a second step to get it to the TV, and that's going to depend a lot on the TV's capabilities.
Okay.
The easiest thing to do would be get a DVR from your satellite company.
Yeah.
That's basically what you're duplicating. But since you ordered the Elgato, yeah, you can do this on the computer. You can also, what kind of computer? You said a Mac?
MacBook Pro.
Does it have a display port out? Yeah. If it's a recent MacBook Pro.
Yeah, it's a 2013.
Oh, yeah, you're great. So, okay. So you get from Apple, they have a display port to HDMI dongle.
Oh, okay.
You plug that in. So you put the laptop next to the TV, you plug it in, and you press play.
And would that go on that Thunderbolt plug or whatever that thing's called?
Yeah, it's a mini display port. It might be Thunderbolt, same thing. You can also do that. But you'll have to get from the Apple TV. Oh, hey, are you running Mountain Lion?
Yes.
Okay, here's another way you could do it. Get an Apple TV. Those are $99, and then you can play anything on your computer into the television.
Oh, there you go.
That might even be the easiest way, because then not only can you play the games, you can play anything on the computer.
Yeah, basically the computer will go
computer,
on the screen.
Yeah, because Mountain Lion has, you know, that AirPlay little on the menu bar, that little AirPlay icon. You select that and you say, play to the Apple TV, and the Apple TV is on your regular TV. So there's a number of ways to do this. You can buy from Apple a converter that'll take the Thunderbolt port and make it HDMI. You could buy a little bit more. You can buy an Apple TV. You could copy it off of the hard drive and put it on something that can connect to the computer, like a Roku. Roku will play a USB stick. But you're going to need one more piece to get it into the television.
And you would suggest the Apple TV?
I think Apple TV is a great choice.
Perfect. And the Elgato, you say, is a pretty good product?
Love it.
Okay, well, thanks for your time, and congratulations on your 1,000th episode.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Andre Irvine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andre.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's Sunday, so I get to kind of relax a little bit. Long-time listener, huge fan.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your 1,000th episode.
Thank you.
And a bit of a confession. I can't listen to you in the house because my wife...
She
loves your voice. It's so soothing. It puts her to sleep.
I thought you were going to say it makes her mad. So I make her sleep. You are getting.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Her name is Lydia.
Lydia, you are getting sleepy. You're getting sleepy, Lydia. Your eyes are getting heavy. Sleep now. Okay, good. Now you can have some fun, Andre.
All right. Thank you.
She's out. What can I do for you, Andre?
I have an iTunes question. I have music on a couple different hard drives. I have an external hard drive that's hooked to my PC that I have, imported music onto that hard drive from iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have, music on the actual hard drive of the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get a new machine, and I just want everything to be together.
No problem. So you're going to have to do a little work up front. Get an external drive or use that external drive you've got and get everything on it. Okay? So you've already got most of it on there probably, right? So copy whatever's on the computer onto that external drive.
Okay.
Put it, you know, you can put it anywhere, but if you put it all in one folder called music, that's the easiest. And now, when you get the new computer, are you going to use iTunes? What do you use?
Yeah, I use iTunes.
Okay. When you get the new computer, there'll be no music on it. You plug in the USB drive. You go to iTunes. In the menu, you say import to library, add to library, I think is what they call it. And it'll say, okay, what do you want me to add to library? You point to that music folder on the external drive. You say, add that to the library. It'll copy everything over. In fact, it even rearranges it so all the albums are in one folder, all the artists are in this, you know, different folders, that kind of thing. It organizes it for you. You won't. Now, there's always a risk of duplicates. For instance, if you have duplicates on your computer that are on the external drive, you know, things like that, and you can clean that up before you do the add to library. But add to library works very well.
Okay, great. If I have everything on my iPod,
that's harder because Apple doesn't, you know, when Apple made the iPod, the records company said, oh my gosh, that's the world's best piracy device. You just bring it over to a friend and say, here, take all my music. So they make that harder to do. It's not impossible. There are programs like Sonuti and others. If you just Google copy iPod music, you can do that. Okay. Usually, if it's a lot of music, it's better if you don't have it, if you have it not on an iPod. But if that's the only place you have it, then you probably should, because if the iPod dies, you're going to lose all your music.
Yeah. Okay, wonderful.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one. Take care. Hey, thank you all for being here. We've had fun. I hope you have, too. 1,000 shows. Here's to another 1,000. Then I'll be an old, old man, but I'll still be doing this because I tell you what, it keeps you young. Thank you, Heather Hammond, for being here. I really appreciate it. Thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director. And most importantly, thanks to all of you. Wouldn't be any point in doing this if you weren't here. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.